This week's episode is sponsored by Amico & Co, the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Med, with large yacht facilities, in-house departments, and berthing in its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit amicoshipyard.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Katya Damborski.
Hello, Stuart, coming at you from the south of France HQ, as you can see.
Yeah, Katya's heading up our Villefranche office. Very nice.
That's it.
I hope the weather is better there than it is here, because it's not very nice here.
Well, it's not snowing, so I've heard you got some snow over there.
Yeah, we got a bit of snow. It's very, very cold. Chipping ice off the windscreen this morning, which is always fun. Mm. Yeah, and I think, but it's going to be warm on the weekend, which is nice. We could talk about the weather all day, but we should probably talk about what we're going to talk about in this week's podcast. We're going to talk about the Explore Yacht Summit, which took place last week in Monaco. We'll bring you some highlights from that, from what I think was the best edition ever of the Explore Yacht Summit. Lots of lovely feedback. It went very well. We're going to talk about Trump's election and the impact that might have on the superyacht industry, and bring you some of the big headlines from the week, as well as go head-to-head in our brokerage boat face-off. I've gone very big and expensive for my pick this week, so we'll get to that a bit later. But yeah, Katya, we've missed Metz this year.
We have. Actually, the podcast listeners are very lucky to have us both, because I think we kind of both wiggled our way out of Metz, right?
Well, I was due to go until I cancelled at the very last minute, just because there's, you know, just so busy at boat at the moment. But I was gutted to miss it, because for the first time ever, we were a media partner of the Superyacht Forum. So we had quite a big team over in Metz, and some of them attended that. And I'd never been before. They never let me in before. So I wanted to go and see what it was like, because it is a very good event. As well as just, you know, see the Metz community. It's amazing. It's a brilliant networking event. Everyone's there. And you see a side of the industry you don't often get to see. So I really enjoy Metz. So I was sad to miss it.
Yeah, I'm always surprised by how many people are there. It really is like kind of second after Monaco Yacht Show. Everyone is at Metz. And we actually had a really big team there. So we had the full Boat International cohort and the IBI guys as well. And we had the stand, which was 11.116, which gives you some scale of just how many stands there are in Metz. By the time you're listening to this, I think Metz will have wrapped up. But next year, I hope we'll run into each other on those crowded halls, Stuart.
I hope so too. And I was speaking to Jane, one of our commercial directors, just this morning, and she was saying that the superyacht part of Metz has grown again. Two enormous halls now dedicated to the superyacht industry. And she said, she's, to use an Australian expression, she was running around like a blue ass fly trying to see everyone and shake as many hands as she could. Jane is the absolute epitome of the Metz salesperson. She will go and see absolutely everyone. She's a total champion. But she said it was super busy, which is great to hear.
That's good to hear indeed.
So now you can use blue arse fly as an expression.
I don't think it works without the Australian twang, does it?
Blue arse fly.
That was pretty good.
Alrighty. So Explore Yacht Summit, Katya, you were there. You hosted a great session, actually, about a rescue in the Mid-Atlantic, which is fascinating. And we'll talk about that in a sec. But what is the Explore Yacht Summit all about for our listeners?
Yeah, so it's one of my favorite events that we run. I think we really nail it with the organization and just the location and size. So it's a one-day conference at the Yacht Club de Monaco. And we host it every year alongside people like Diamond Yachting, ExploreYachts.com, Icon Yachts, Cantiere, Delamarque, and EOS. So lots of big names in one room. Really, we get a big crowd of people there, people who you don't always see at the events. They really enjoy coming to our Explore Yacht Summit. And this year, I think, was particularly good because the keynote speaker really brought so much energy. So he's an explorer called Monty Halls, who I mentioned in the last podcast episode. So I won't go on about him. But I met him last year at a Pelorus event and kind of talked to the off about how he should come for our Explorial Summit. And then a year later, he did come. But he's made some incredible underwater discoveries in places like India. He also worked under Nelson Mandela and he has appeared in lots of TV shows. So if you're in the UK and you've ever switched on a documentary about exploration, chances are you may have seen Monty Halls. And he was brilliant, don't you think? He just had so much energy and so many motivational things to say.
Yeah, he was amazing. Energy's right. I really want to, it's very practiced the way he commanded the stage, but he did it in a really compelling way. He, kind of looked right into the eyes of the audience and was animated and it was kind of electric. And having that kind of stage presence, not many people have it, but Monty Halls has it in spades. And just his name, Monty Halls, it's just a brilliant name for an explorer and for someone to open a summit like that. He did a fantastic job. I was blown away. I was very, very, very happy. He kicked it all off.
Yeah, that's very true. Good name and good stage presence. And he wasn't over-rehearsed, which was really good. So that was a great way to start the day. And we also had some other big names like Nina Jensen, who's obviously part of the RevOcean team. RevOcean is obviously the largest yacht in the world, measuring almost 200 meters. And she shared some never before seen insights and images. And they definitely piqued the interest of the news editor in me. I was scrolling in the audience taking notes. And she was great as well. I think it was such a really valuable day. And obviously, I thought my panel was smashing, as I'm sure you did as well, Stuart.
Your panel was very good. But before we get to that, just another, just to reinforce what you said about Nina. So everyone knows about the RevOcean project in our industry. It was announced, I think, we got first kind of news about it in 2017, didn't we? And then there was some amazing photography by Guillaume Plisson of sections of it being built. And everyone got very, very excited. And then there were a few issues with the shipyard and everything went very, very quiet for a few years. Because had the original build schedule been maintained, the boat would be on the water operating right now. But obviously, various challenges in the construction, which Nina spoke about in her session at the summit, which basically has pushed the delivery way back to, looks like, 2026. So she kind of shed some light on what happened there. She also revealed what they're going to be including in this. They extended the boat quite significantly and they've added a new block into it. But that has actually allowed them to massively upgrade the research and science potential of the vessel. And so she told us all about what extra treats will be packed into RevOcean. So her session was basically all unreleased exclusive information about the project, about the biggest superyacht project in the world. So that's why it was so fascinating, and we're very lucky that she agreed to come along and shed a bit more light on RevOcean. But yeah, your panel was great, Katya. I thought it was really, really good Q&A. So it was with Philip Atkinson. He's the captain of rotational captain of Planet Nine, and he principally spoke about did they save that? They might well have saved the life of that poor woman. So basically, there was a 24 meter sailing boat crossing the Atlantic, and which had an accident shortly, I think, into the crossing, and a bit of a metal deck fitting was ripped out by a sudden jibe, and then this metal fitting basically punctured or hit the ankle of one of the crew and punctured a hole right through her ankle, and it was completely messed up her ankle. Fortunately, she's now all better and walking and running and exercising, so it's that's the silver lining. But it was a pretty desperate situation, and for 5 days Planet Nine shadowed this sailing vessel, offering support, offering comfort and reassurance, and they performed a critical service in doing that.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard the story, I was absolutely kind of bowled away by just how long it was, you know, 8 days in total, if you include the time that they actually spent on board with the patient. And one of the first things I was sent was a picture of her foot. Did you hear about the foot shenanigan, Stuart?
Yeah, the Philip did offer to show me a picture of the foot, but I was feeling a bit squeamish, so I didn't actually look
at he wanted
picture.
To have it on the screen, on the stage. And I wanted to go for it as well. I was like, yeah, let's show them the foot. You can see like the bone sticking out of it. I was like, we'll just blur out the bone.
No.
I was overruled by all of my colleagues who said that was too disgusting.
You would have had people retching in the aisles.
Yeah. Me and Philip were like, let's get the foot out. But alas, the audience was spared that.
That's one of your final questions, was what were the learnings? And no crew necessarily. Certainly they weren't on Planet Nine at the time, were specifically trained to deal with an injury of this significance. And he said, well, perhaps in future it would be great to have a crew member who could triage an injury like that and render proper medical support. But that certainly wasn't the case. And Philip actually said, one of the things he tells his crew is, you know, look after yourselves on big crossings, because if you get into trouble, it's going to be me looking after you with the first aid kit. He said that certainly steals their minds and makes them extra careful.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want you stepping in if I ever had an injury at boat show, Stuart.
Just lots of morphine.
Actually, all right, go on then.
But he was great. He was a great speaker and it was a very good interview.
Yeah, thanks. I thought your Northwest Passage one was pretty good as well. That was really interesting. So you had an owner, and then tell me about the other panelists on stage.
So this was the first session after Monty woke everyone up with his fantastic performance at the top of the show. So then we spoke about the Northwest Passage, and I had Tim Soper from EOS. Heis Sleik, who is the owner and operator of a sailing yacht called Tekla, which was built in 1915, and he's been through the Northwest Passage a whole bunch. And lastly, the owner of Shinkai, the 56-meter ice-classed Fedship Explorer. And what was good about it was the owner of Shinkai is not a great fan of the Northwest Passage. So rather than it be some kind of unalloyed celebration of this fantastic sea route across the top of Canada, it was a deeper examination of its pros and cons. And I thought that worked quite well. I mean, the owner of Shinkai did not like the Northwest Passage. And obviously Heis and Tim took the opposing view. So it was quite a nice back and forth between those three talking about the transit.
Yeah, it was very unpolished for sure. And I think, yeah, Monty Hall's got everyone listening, and then you got everyone kind of agog with this slight disagreement on stage, which is really nice to see unfold. You know, everyone was making really good points and it was very engaging. I think the whole room knew how everyone felt about things. And it was really kind of interesting to see a different, you know, something that's not just everyone agreeing on stage and being like, yeah, my God, amazing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always better with a bit of debate and a bit of back and forth. And it's even better if, as the moderator, you could just kind of recede into the background and let them just go at it. I thought it was brilliant.
That's true, yeah. So he wasn't our only owner. We had a slightly more agreeable owner at the end of the day, right?
Yeah, we had Eric Vonk, the owner of Scintilla Maris, closing the show and obviously talking about the 17-year epic production of his fishing trawler turned super yacht. And it was great. He's such a lovely guy. And it was just a good, just told a great story, you know, why it took 17 years, why he wanted to turn a fishing trawler into a super yacht, what he's doing with the boat, where he's going, how capable it is, why more people should be looking at these kind of commercial hulls instead of starting something completely new. Yeah, it was, yeah, good storyteller and yeah, very engaging guy.
He did also say at one point though that he you know, knew that conversions weren't necessarily faster or more cost effective than a new build, right? Which I thought was quite interesting. It showed it was a real labor of love.
Yeah. It depends the approach you take, I suppose. But the and we did a feature in the November issue about turning kind of these commercial vessels into modern yachts, and it isn't a shortcut. It isn't cheaper necessarily. It can be a long, drawn out, laborious, and very expensive process. But the romance of it is undeniable. I mean, the fact that, and you know, then the benefits too, the practical volume benefits. I mean, this Scintilla Maris draws 5 meters. There's 5 meters of boat under the water in a 46.5 meter platform. I mean, it's TARDIS like below decks on that boat. Endless room. And so how he used all that volume is interesting, and how he kind of set the boat up for the most efficient operation. It's his diesel electric boat, which was very important to him. And it's just a good story. Also a feature in Boat International not too long ago, so you can read all about Scintilla Maris and Eric's 17 year journey on the website.
Yeah, I thought that was a great panel. Although my favourite was actually the data segment, which happens at the start of every Explore Your Summer and is always very eye-opening.
So I thought I'd quiz Katia Damborski, aka the yacht writer, aka the super yacht editor of Boat International, because obviously she should be on top of all these stats, right? You'd think so. So, Katia, how many Explorer yachts in total have ever been built?
Am I not going to get multiple choice? Sorry, I was waiting for A, B, or C.
Okay, I'll give you A, B, and C.
You think I can just pull that out of my brain?
776, 786, or 796?
I'm going to go for B, 786.
Always go for B. 786 is correct. So right. In this data presentation, we give a kind of state of play for the Explorer Yacht market. And we introduce some headline numbers. So that's right. So 786 Explorers have been built to date. How many of those 786 are ice classed? A30, B40, C50.
Oh, see, I thought it was 50 something, but now you've thrown me. It's not 50, is it?
No.
30 something? A?
A. A is correct. Well done. 2 out of 2. God, 30 of the 7. That's yeah, it is quite small. Isn't it? I thought it would be bigger than that. So of the 786 Explorers delivered to date, 30 are ice classed. And last question, I'll stop torturing you. Since 2020, how many Explorer yachts have been delivered?
Did you even say that in data presentation? Was that on a slide?
It was on the opening slide.
Oh yeah, you do it. Yeah, you do it by decade, don't you? Am I going to get A, B, and C?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. 130, 150, or 170.
130.
Correct. 3 for 3. I think you're cheated. There's definitely some cheating going on here.
I really was paying attention. I love the data presentation. I think it's always fantastic. I also learned that Cantiere de la Marca has produced the most Explorers by both number of units and total number of yachts produced, which I thought was insane. And I think Darman Yachting was second in that, and then Nordhavn. So, yeah.
Yeah, CDM are on fire.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And the largest Explorer yacht sale was Octopus, right?
It was. Nord.
That's a new build, secondhand.
That's a new build, yeah. But it's still sold by a broker.
True. Okay. So all of this data, I assume at some point, is going to be up on the website in the form of a nice article written by our business editor, Gabrielle.
Yes, it will be. But I could run you through some of the other headline figures. So the numbers show that the trend for Explorer yachting really took off in the year 2000. In the preceding decade, from 1990 to 1999, just 39 Explorer yachts were delivered. Between 2000 and 2009, that number exploded to 148. It went up again between 2010 and 2019 to 169. And so far this decade, 130 have been delivered. So if that trend continues, we will blow through that previous decade's record once again. And you know, we could see something like 250, 260 Explorer yachts delivered, which is, will be in this decade, which will be a huge increase on anything seen before. So that's so in total, 786 Explorers delivered to date, 30 of which are ice classed. But if you look at the fleet in detail, the average size of an Explorer delivered to date is 37.19 meters. The average gross tonnage is 493. Which is creeping upwards, but it's interesting that the most of the Explorers on the water are kind of sub 40 meters. You tend to think they're all, you know, massive and ice classed and hugely capable heli decks, heli hangers, blah blah blah. But really, most Explorers are much more modestly sized.
Yeah, well, I mean, as people get more and more creative with their ways of, you know, cramming more amenities and getting more technology in smaller packages, I guess that's the natural outcome, right?
Absolutely. Currently in build, and this is an exclusive number which will be released in the Global Order Book in the January issue, there are currently around the world 105 Explorer yachts in build, which is a record. Last year's figure was 99, and the figure before that was 88. So we're seeing this increasing upward incline of Explorers in build around the world, a trend that's set to continue. And yeah, as you mentioned, the biggest second-hand Explorer yacht sale to date on the brokerage market was Octopus, which sold in 2021 with an asking price of 235 million euros. The biggest new construction sold, Explorer construction sold by a broker was Nord, which sold in 2025 with an undisclosed asking price. So they're the kind of the headline stats really from the summit, which, as you mentioned, hopefully Gabby will be churning into a very nice readable article for the website shortly.
Brilliant. Well, I thought that was I always like hearing the sneak preview of the Global Order Book before the general release. But I guess the full Global Order Book figures are coming to a magazine near you soon.
Yeah, they're all in the January issue. We're just in the final proofing stages now of the big kind of Global Order Book report and the essay, the business essay that runs alongside it. Some interesting figures in there. We can bring those to you in a future podcast when everything's gone to press. But we should mention the December issue before we get to the January issue, because that is out now. Some great stuff in there. We've got San, the 45-meter kind of super yacht day boat, really, from Alia Yachts on the cover. Amazing boat.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of that design. I think that, you know, just kind of slightly retro looking. And I like it that they haven't tried to do what everyone else is trying to do, which is shove more and more volume into a smaller package. They've just been like, no, we just want a really nice, kind of very sleek, sorry, no, hate that word, but kind of glossy, black, supersized day boat, basically. And that's what's on the front cover. She looks amazing.
Yeah, it's a great cover. I was very happy with that cover. Yeah, I love this boat when I saw it at Monaco. I think I've spoken about it on the podcast before. You get this kind of clean view from the aft deck straight to the bow through the main kind of living space. Loads of light, loads of deck space, a really good kind of party boat. Yeah, and it looks very cool too.
Yeah, Sino do always do a really nice job on their designs. And what else is going on?
In the December issue, we've got the Christmas gift guide, which is this wonderful, our creative director loves this. It's kind of like a, you know, 10 or 12 pages of the most expensive things money can buy, luxuriously kind of designed. There's a watch in there I quite like the look of, the Patek Philippe perpetual calendar in white gold, a steal, £91,330. So if you're looking for a Christmas present for me, Katya, just look no further.
I'll add that straight to my list, Stuart. What do you say it was? Can you describe it to me? What makes it stand out to you?
It's just
what
a
makes
beautifully,
it worse?
Just a very elegant, but not terribly overstated Patek Philippe. Yeah, just very good. Very good for the wrist in some of the fancier parts of the world.
I'll have to pick up the gift guide and have a look for the gift that you can get me.
Okay.
Actually, do you know what I quite fancy is something else in the issue, which is the classic runabouts, right?
Yeah, so we got a feature about classic runabouts, some of these, well, modern classic runabouts. So kind of harking back to a kind of the golden age of yachting, but with all the modern kit on board. Things like the J-Craft torpedo and some great launches from Cockwell's down in Cornwall. Just lovely, classic looking, but modern boats. We got a big feature about private aviation and our annual Christmas quiz, but I won't test you on that one.
That will be coming to a future podcast episode, I hope. We always tend to do a Christmas special, right? Will I get called up for that, Stuart?
I hope so. We'll get a few of the podcast regulars in that one, I think. It's always good fun with some cheap sort of champagne to celebrate the closing of the year. But we can't really avoid Trump, can we? We've got to talk Trump
a little bit. I mean, we spoke about it with Cecile on a previous podcast episode, and it was kind of in the wake of the election, just the day after. So I think she was a bit like a deer in headlights about the whole thing. I think it came as more of a surprise than I thought. I kind of don't really, you know, we're looking at the American politics, especially being in Fort Lauderdale, I kind of thought Trump was a done deal, but I think Cecile was quite surprised. And I think in the wake of that, we've done a bit of a deep dive into what Trump's presidency actually means or might mean for the super yachting world, specifically the brokerage world, I guess.
Yeah, specifically the brokerage world. I think the scale of his victory took a lot of people by surprise. A lot of people have been forecasting it, but there's just the level of the win, of the victory, shocked plenty of people. But during the Fort Lauderdale boat show, there was, I mean, I don't think it's giving the game away to say that, you know, lots of people in the super yacht industry in the States wanted Trump to win because they see it as nothing but a positive for the market. So we, every, with the Global Order Book Report, we also write a kind of business essay every year. And we asked Andrew McDowell, who puts that together, to consider the Trump victory and gather some quotes from some senior industry sources. And Gabby as well has put together something for the website. And I thought I'd just read out a few of the quotes from some of these people because they make quite interesting reading. Obviously, the tax cuts and deregulation are the kind of big pillar kind of policies of Trump. On the back of that, we can expect a little boost to brokerage sales, particularly. And Alex Clark, a yacht broker at Denison, said, "I have had multiple clients reach out to me explaining they are confident moving forward in the sales process as a result of Trump's win. The US Federal Reserve will most likely continue to cut interest rates through 2025, which will be an added boost. So I'm confident that the coming year will see a major increase in sales activity." Tom Conboy, meanwhile, the director of sales for Heath in North America, Mexico, Bahamas, and the Caribbean, said that Trump's election is probably the most positive thing that could possibly have happened. It gives a great deal of confidence to business people, and it's not only a leg up to the super yacht business, but people who work for a living and business in general. It's very, very good for people buying yachts and people in the yacht business. What's more important than tax cuts is deregulation so businesses can operate. And I think that was a view certainly shared by lots at the Fort Lauderdale Boat Show.
Yeah, some strong words from Tom Conboy. So that's one side of it, but there's another side of it, right? Which is basically this whole tariff argument, which you might have to explain to me a little bit, because although I like to think I understand, you probably understand better than I. But basically, it's like taxes on imports, right? Which could affect sales and charters as well, but also can it also affect construction, or is that?
Yeah, it depends where the components are coming from. That's right. So the tariffs is an interesting one because it ultimately does risk higher prices for new builds. Certainly, obviously, if European companies are exporting to the US and there's a 20% tariff or whatever it might be slapped on them, that's going to be passed on to the consumer ultimately. And similarly for products going the other way. And there was a brief tariff spat in Trump's first term when he put some tariffs on imported steel and aluminium, which led to a retaliatory tariff which the EU put on US vessels for 25%. And in November 2021, president of the NMMA, Frank Hugelmeier, reported a 50% reduction in exports to the EU during the 3 years the tariff had been in effect. That ultimately led to an agreement between the EU and US the same year to suspend all tariffs relating to the dispute until 2025. But if Trump goes through with his threat to chuck a bunch of levies on imported goods, you know, logic suggests that that will ultimately lead to higher final unit prices for consumers, which isn't great news for the new build market. Because, you know, as we know, when you build a super yacht, you don't get everything from the same place. Like in his, he's being prompted by a nativist kind of desire, I suppose, to enhance local industry. But super yachts have components and parts from all over the world. And if they're all coming with associated tariffs, then the final build price will be higher. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Hopefully, talk of tariffs is played down a bit when he assumes the highest office in the land in 2025. We shall see. But certainly on the brokerage side, people are very optimistic. And lots of positive noises coming from the super yacht community. And I think if you polled the entire super yacht community, they'd be pretty happy.
I think you're right. And I think it sounds like the brokerage market might see an uptick as a result of this. And it sounds like new builds and construction may be the other way. But we'll have to see, I guess. Did you say Hugelmeier? What a good name.
Yeah, it's a great name, isn't it? Frank Hugelmeier.
Name. That's up there with like Monty Hall's in terms of people with good names. Hugelmeier.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Since we're talking brokerage, why don't we get into our picks this week?
Let's get into our picks. But before we do, Stuart, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh oh.
Because at the top of this episode, you said you picked a really good yacht, and I just looked at the script and you have. But is this whole brokerage of the week not supposed to be a yacht that's just come to market within the last week? Like a new instruction, a price drop, or a CA change?
Well, it was in the news, and I've bent the rules. So.
Oh, it was in the news. Oh, sure. So you can just hoover it up, can you? Sure. Okay.
Well, before we get onto my cheat, why don't we get your legitimate brokerage pick?
You know what? I'd love to tell you my legitimate brokerage pick because it's a smashing choice, Stuart. And you're going to know why I chose it, I assume. So it's the 35-meter RV Yacht Motor Yacht Infinity 9, and she has just this week joined the market with Denison Yachting. She is asking 11.95 million euros, which is quite a lot. Well, a lot compared to my normal picks, which are kind of 5 million and under. This seems like, whoa, to me. And she's lying in Monaco. Do you know why I picked her, Stuart?
Is it because you want to marry the owner?
It may well be a little bit because of that, yes. But not, let it be said, just like this isn't just some random like inclination that I have. Because so the owner is Tony Parker. And Tony Parker is someone who I met and interviewed on his boat in Capri a few years ago. And he told me all about the process of commissioning her. He told me a couple of things that really stood out to me, actually. So one was that if you tell your dream to somebody and they don't laugh at you, you're not dreaming big enough. And he also said that he picked Ava, or AVA, which is a shipyard based in Turkey, because they wanted to compete against the big shipyards. And that's the way he felt when he was in France, and he really wanted to come and join the US team. He felt like a bit of an outsider looking in. So he saw some of himself in the shipyard, and that's actually why he chose to commission it. And he commissioned it with a lot of customizations, actually. He really put his own stamp on it. He had a real idea of what he wanted from years of chartering, so lots of little kind of tweaks on board. And he was also a really nice guy, and I had a very nice time on his boat. I was a big, big, big Desperate Housewives fan when I was younger, and you know, he used to be married to Eva Longoria. So I think that's kind of why I had a bit of a crush on him. But also, did you know that he actually married, or at least was engaged to, a journalist in the past? So I thought, Stuart, this was my chance. I was like, okay, round two, it's my moment now. I'm going to go and meet him on his yacht, just sail off into the sunset. And then, you know, 6 months from then, he'd be like, oh, how much did that girl Katia who used to work for us? Yeah, she went off and interviewed an owner and we haven't really heard from her since. But her Instagram looks like she's having a great time. And that would be it. So that was my hopes and dreams. I'm still hoping and dreaming, actually. Now she's on the market, maybe I can try and do some kind of like in-depth brokerage.
Well, like Tony says, if you tell your dream to somebody and they don't laugh at you, you're not dreaming big enough. We should probably tell everyone listening that Tony Parker, who aren't basketball fans, Tony Parker was an NBA star of the NBA. He was a very, very good basketball player. And
the listeners know that, okay. Stuart. They're cultured. They know Tony Parker.
So, yeah, big name in the world of basketball and a penchant for journalists. So, you never know, Katia.
Yeah, well, you never know.
Maybe he'll be listening to this and you'll get a phone call.
Yeah, that would be the day. I think that's a really good pick. I think that's well-priced, nice-looking boat, and has a bit of colour and a story to it. And also, it'll probably sell reasonably soon, which I'm not sure we can say the same for your boat, Stuart, because it's incredibly expensive. The most expensive yacht on the market, possibly ever.
Possibly ever. Right? We don't really know the exact asking price. There's been a few numbers whispered, but none... I think I can repeat without being shot. So I've gone for the ludicrously large and expensive Project 821, the 118.8 meter hydrogen, or at least partly hydrogen powered Fed ship, which has just completed sea trials, which is why she's in the news, and she is available to buy through Edmiston. So like I said, no asking price has been officially declared, but it's going to be very, very punchy. The boat was designed inside and out by RWD, so it has very, very elegant lines, as is very typical of that studio. It stores liquid hydrogen on board and converts it into electricity via a fuel cell for both hotel load and coastal navigation. So it uses hydrogen a bit like my Kia Sorento uses its plug-in hybrid power. So I'm relating my Kia Sorento to... it's very expensive super yacht. It's kind of a range extender and a bit of a, it runs, gets the radio running and starts the car on the electricity. But then ultimately, if you're going long miles, it's traditionally powered. So that makes total sense to me. Project 821 has a 92 square meter storage space for this hydrogen. And it vents as water vapor. And it added this, hydrogen power added 4 meters to the yacht's original specification length. However, in the future, this could be used for easier to store methanol, a liquid fuel, in ambient conditions. Other standout features of the boat include a semi-submerged Neptune lounge, a cinema, library, hospital facility, and an 8.2-meter pool with contra flow. So Jamie Edmiston, CEO at Edmiston, called the project the best yacht ever built. The brief was to build the greenest and most environmentally advanced yacht ever built without compromise. The yacht we see today, designed by RWD and built by FedShip, is without doubt the best yacht ever built. I am proud to have been involved since inception of this idea, he said. So yeah, Project 821, that's my pick this week.
Yeah, that's probably without exaggeration the best yacht ever built. She really is absolutely insane. I'm dying to see her. But she's definitely not new to market. I actually remember when she came onto the market, it was during the World Superyacht Awards, and your, at the time, digital editor was in the back of a water taxi trying to get to the venue, patting away on her laptop, trying to get this story out with great commitment. And I saw Jamie later at the ceremony, and I was like, Jamie, like, did you have to announce this today? Like, we're all here at the World Superyacht Awards. And he was just like, yeah, well, you know what it's like. And I was like, no, I don't actually, Jamie, but it sounds like you have a very good life just jetting around between awards ceremonies and listing multi-million-dollar superyachts.
Multi-hundred-million-dollar superyachts.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that's probably the most expensive brokerage pick in Boat Briefing podcast history too. That should probably be noted.
Yep. And she's been in the news recently because she completed sea trials. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. That's why she's in the news. So some nice photos of her out in the North Sea, pushing through some weather. Yeah, lovely looking thing.
What other news is floating around, Stuart? You're actually probably more connected to the newsroom than I am these days, because I'm here in France, kind of trying not to look at the trauma of the daily newsletter, which I used to have to edit. And Stuart's actually there in the thick of it, seeing it all play out every day.
I am. So I'll kick us off this week. So Turkish shipyard Newmarine has revealed the first interior renderings for its flagship Explorer model, the Newmarine 45 XP. So this 45.4 meter model is the largest model in the XP range. An interior design is courtesy of longstanding collaborator Hotlab. The model incorporates a neutral color palette with textured carpet suited to a contemporary, clean yet cozy beach house aesthetic. Materials such as walnut, tavatine, leather and oak are going to be used throughout. On the tech side, the 45 XP has a projected range of 6,000 nautical miles with a top speed of 16 knots and a cruising speed of 12 knots.
Very nice. I like these new marines. I like the style of them, don't you?
I do. They lots of space and volume. And I spent a bit of time on a slightly smaller one a couple of years ago in Turkey, and I was blown away by the amount of volume. But the sun decks is particularly amazing. Sun decks, huge platforms for their length, and they're selling like hotcakes. Newmarine are doing phenomenally well. They've got something like 15 or 20 orders, something like that. I mean, they've really hit a rich vein with these Explorer models. They're proving incredibly popular.
That's interesting. And am I right in thinking that they sell a lot in the US, or is that just a preconception that I have?
No, it's true. Yeah, they're very popular in the US. They found a good market there. South Florida, good amount of new marines cruising around the Bahamas, etc. Yeah, they've done well there.
All right. Well, staying in the US for our next news story, it's Westport Yachts. They've announced the launch of the first unit in its 35.8 meter raised pilot house series, the W117. So that yacht, which is called Priceless, will now undergo extensive sea trials ahead of her delivery, and she will be debuting at the Palm Beach Boat Show. So that'll be great to see her there. I'm looking forward to seeing a brand new Westport stateside. So construction of the GRP model began in 2022. That was just following the relaxation of COVID-19 restrictions. And the concept was therefore developed with three-dimensional modelling and structural software as used in the aviation industry. It's always quite interesting hearing about what was going on during COVID and kind of those projects now coming to fruition. Because at the time, I think during COVID, everyone was like, oh my God, what's happening? What's going on? The world is kind of falling to pieces. But actually, people were adapting, building, pushing ahead, signing contracts, kind of all in the background. So quite a nice thing to see.
Yeah, it is. Westport particularly got punished during COVID because the restrictions on their workforce up in Washington State were particularly severe. So they struggled in that period. But it's great to see a new model coming out of the sheds at Westport. Very, you know, storied US brand, great following. You see them everywhere, charter well. And that 34 meter model is just one of the most successful, I think it is the most successful superyacht series ever. So it's great to see a new one.
Yeah, and that size range for sure.
Last up, we have the news that the first 44-meter model from Bonetti's new class range has launched in Via Reggio and has been christened Juno 7. Delivery is expected in February 2025. She was sold by Northrop & Johnson in 2023, just days after the Italian yachting giant lifted the wraps on this flagship model, which is now the yard's largest GRP construction. Prior to this addition, the class range was comprised of the Moto Panfilo 37, and the new 44-meter bears some of the same classic design features. Exterior and interior design is the work of the very prolific Giorgio Cassetta, and the model is defined by its clean lines and four spacious decks. Uncluttered interiors and innovative use of materials are designed to create a relaxing and informal atmosphere. This includes the use of large transparent surfaces like the mirrors on the hull sides in the main saloon, which reflect the light and the water and give the appearance of a brighter space. Another model from Bonetti that I expect will do incredibly well.
Yeah, I like the sound of this one. I like a Giorgio Cassetta line, and I like the Mortepan Filos, and I like the idea of having a space that feels larger than it is. So tick, tick, and tick.
I'm sure plenty of buyers will be feeling the same. And that brings us to a close of this week's boat briefing. We're not going to do a data section because we tested Catch's knowledge of the Explorer Yacht numbers at the top of the podcast. So we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much, Katya.
Thank you, Stuart. Thanks for quizzing me. Hope you remember that I scored 3 for 3 when it's coming time to think about Christmas gifts and birthday gifts. It's in fact my birthday too.
I won't forget, as long as you don't forget my £91,000 Patek Philippe. And that brings us to the end of this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Naomi Mitchell and Adam Geist and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we will see you next time.